Philly showed off its historical roots, Independence Hall, the Liberty Bell, and the convention highlighted that the city is booming. It's become a foodie capital. It's always been a center of music. But Philadelphia is also the largest city in the country with so-called deep poverty. How did that happen? Aaron Moselle of Here and Now contributor WHYY in Philadelphia reports.
In the middle of Westmoreland Street in North Philly is a red row home with steep stone steps. In the mid-1940s, Dolores Harris and her family lived here before moving around the corner and eventually out completely.
It was my grandmother, grandfather, and my great-grandmother and two aunts. And then a father, mother, and four kids.
Harris says the neighborhood was like one big family. They looked out for one another, even watched big boxing matches together.
Joe Louis was fighting, and everybody was on our steps and in our house, you know.
At that time, even those without a high school diploma could earn a good living. But things changed as 1960 crept closer. A lot of the factories that dotted the neighborhood were either declining or gone. Soon, there were fewer homeowners, more renters. The jobs simply weren't there to keep them around long.
You know, it's just like one drops off, and then another drops off, and then one day you look up and a lot of the people that I knew were not there.
Harris's story partially explains why Philadelphia is the poorest big city in the U.S., says Temple University professor Judith Levine. As factories packed up for bigger, cheaper spaces in the suburbs or overseas, neighborhoods started decaying.
And what's replaced it is this industry that requires not just some education, but a lot of education. So the healthcare industry and the higher education industry requires a lot of education. Our educational system is in disarray. It's underfunded. And our population is not highly educated.
So-called white flight did a lot of damage, too. It concentrated poverty in the city. Robert Chaskin teaches classes on urban poverty and social policy at the University of Chicago. He says some of that phenomenon was fueled by the real estate industry. As more and more African Americans moved from the rural South to northern cities, including Philly, realtors used scare tactics to drive out white working class families.
Making the case that this neighborhood is about to change, you know, Black people are going to move in, your property values are going to go down, you should get out while you can. And so they were able to, particularly in these sort of working-class homeowner neighborhoods, sort of purchase these properties at relatively low prices and then turn around and rent them, often breaking them into smaller units at premiums to the African-Americans who were moving in.
At the same time, banks made it difficult or impossible for African Americans living in certain areas to get loans, mortgages, and other financial services. Redlining was officially outlawed in the 1970s, but its impact is still being felt today, says Chaskin. Which brings us to 2016. Roughly one quarter of Philadelphians live in poverty, and roughly half of them are living in what's called deep poverty. That means earning less than half of the federal poverty line. For a single parent with two children, we're talking about roughly $10,000 a year. These figures are bad, but just a few years ago, they were actually worse. During the height of the Great Recession, Philadelphia's poverty rate was 28%. But since then, Temple professor Judith Levine says the city's population has grown steadily every year. And the people moving in, a lot of them aren't living in poverty. Many are young professionals.
They are diluting the poverty rate because they're part of the denominator of the population of the city, and they're not part of the numerator of people in poverty.
In other words, Philadelphia still has roughly the same number of people living in poverty. Levine sees some silver linings. She's encouraged by the city's new mayor, Jim Kenney, and his commitment to addressing poverty. But Levine thinks the city will be dealing with the same issues 10, even 20 years from now, in part because it can take multiple generations to break the cycle of poverty, and there's not enough being done to shrink it. Back in North Philly, Dolores Harris heads towards her car to return to her new home. She lives in Chestnut Hill now, one of the city's wealthiest neighborhoods. Talking to her, you get the sense there's a twinge of guilt that she left Westmoreland Street behind, and that others have too.
We keep running. Where are we running to? You know, what's going to be the ultimate? Because at some point, we're not going to be able to run anymore, you know. If we have a problem here, anybody stop to think about, let's fix this problem, and then maybe we'll have to run?
But what Harris calls running often gets called moving up. And one of Philadelphia's biggest challenges is to help people out of poverty while also working to ensure longtime residents in gentrifying neighborhoods don't get pushed out so people can move up without feeling they have to move out. For Here and Now, I'm Aaron Moselle in Philadelphia.